Welcome to The Good Word. I am Chiagua Heiss, Professor of Biblical Studies at the Walla Walla University School of Theology. I am your host and study guide author. Our series this quarter is entitled Exodus, and you guessed it, we will be discussing through this quarter the book of Habakkuk. I'm just kidding. We will be discussing the book of Exodus. And my conversation partners for this series are two professors I have the joy of calling friends, Dr. Matilda Fry, Professor of Biblical Studies in the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Dr. Jody Washburn, Associate Professor of Social Work and Sociology here at Walla Walla University. We all share a deep passion for the Hebrew Bible, and it is a joy to join them in these conversations about the book of Exodus. Matilda, Jody, thank you for joining me here today. A leading question for us today is simply this. In my study guide, I wrote a little bit about what the book of Exodus means to me. I think I outlined two or three things that come to my mind when I think about the book of Exodus. But if I asked you today, as we open this series together, what does the book of Exodus evoke to you? When you think about this book, what comes to your mind?
Two things for me.
All right, Jody, let's hear it.
Women of resistance and the desire of God to dwell with his people.
Mm. Beautiful themes. We'll get to those too, I'm sure, throughout this series. The six different women that we find, at least at the beginning of Exodus, and this divine desire to dwell with the people. I think in my introduction, I wrote about how Exodus is the precedent, right, of this beautiful Christian truth that we hold of the incarnation of God moving toward humanity. Well, it's not news in the New Testament. This has been the mode of divine desire since the Hebrew Bible, since the Old Testament. And we're going to see that in the book of Exodus. I love that. Matilda, what does this book convey to you?
So first, I want to correct you, Tiago.
Oh, let's go.
Seven women.
Seven, I said.
Seven.
In the beginning or throughout the whole
thing? In the beginning.
Then I missed one.
Right in the beginning.
This is why I have Matilda Fry with us and right. Jody Washburn. I'm here to be corrected. Seven. Another reminder of the perfection of creation in the book of Exodus.
Actually, sure. Two times seven.
Two
and
times.
And we'll get to those.
Love.
I hope so.
I love it. Go ahead, Matilda.
The other theme that I want to put out in addition to what you already said, Jody, I believe the book of Exodus is wonderful on Sabbath rest.
Mm.
It contains the most amazing ways to discuss Sabbath. And Sabbath is the important element for us as Seventh-day Adventists.
For sure. Theme of the Sabbath, I mean, through and through, even in the days of Egypt with Pharaoh, it's the first command giving in the wilderness. We find it in the Decalogue, and we also find it throughout all of the rhythms of covenant and sanctuary later. So Sabbath, for sure, a very important theme. And Matilda, you've written about the Sabbath extensively in the past too, so I'm excited to hear not only what you're going to share, but how else you will correct me throughout this whole series. I'm looking forward to that for sure. So wonderful. I mean, I'm looking at my study guide here, friends, and maybe a initial question that we could have, apart from these feelings that we have on the book of Exodus, is simply, what kind of a world is the world depicted in the first chapters of Exodus? And are there any similarities between that world of Egypt back then and our world today?
Right. I think there are definitely similarities. We are in a world where people suffer, where people feel the heaviness of oppression in every kind of way. And we are in a world where people cry out about it, literally, with what the text tells us.
Mm.
But it is about humans. It is about people. They are named right at the beginning of the book.
I mean, one of the questions I had in the guide here too is the meaningfulness of the name of the book itself, right? So maybe that's a side question that we can explore there. It's not originally named Exodus, meaning, you know, if this was truly a book about the Exodus, it would have ended rather early, maybe around chapter 15, where they sing right after the deliverance from Egypt, and then you still have chapters leading up all the way to 40 to make sense of something else apart from the Exodus itself. So there's definitely something more happening here. And I think it's tied to that reality of the names, that these are real people. Shemot, these are the names, is the name of the book of that we call the Exodus. There's something concrete. There's something human. There's something real happening here that I think evokes this sort of memory of how what has happened there that can shed insight into the concreteness of our lived experience even today. Jody, I don't know if you're thinking about anything there. What do you think?
I think what comes to mind as I think of the opening words,
what kind of a world,
and the opening world of the book, Rabbi Nahum Ward Lev, when he writes about Exodus in his book, The Liberating Path of the Hebrew Prophets, he points out something that I think is really compelling. Going back, Matilda, to what you said about how we see here a vivid depiction of dehumanization in the opening pages of Exodus that we see mapped out almost, I mean, it's playing out on the screens of our phone every single day. This is not something long ago and far away. And Nahum Ward Lev points out that even in the naming and not naming, the text shows us part of dehumanization. It brings it to our attention by naming the book, which in Hebrew, the first line is essentially the name of the book. So the book begins, these are the names. And we have those initial names showing this family lineage that goes back to the previous book in the Torah, Genesis. But then essentially he points out that the dehumanization that the people are enduring, not only the oppressed, but the oppressors as well, is depicted in the text by a lack of names, which is extremely surprising when the text begins, these are the names. So you have what he describes as a basically a degenesis, an unbecoming, where you see the dehumanization. In you don't have names even for the Pharaoh. There's no name. There's only the title. You have no names for Moses' parents. You have no name. And this then is like almost showing that part of what is happening is a, how does he describe it? He essentially describes the creative, life-giving power of God as something that breathes life into something for the purpose of then that breathing life. And it's this ripple effect of life-giving, creative energy. And that what we see in the beginning of Genesis is a vivid depiction of that reversing.
Of Genesis or Exodus?
Of Exodus, yeah, thank you. What we see in the beginning of Exodus is a vivid depiction of that reversing, where instead of going out into more aliveness, in more individuation, more differentiation, where God's creative power is manifest in all these beings, it's being narrowed more and more to the point where there's no, like, all you are just slaves or the oppressor. And the dehumanization is happening at every level.
It simplifies the way society is organized into these two, oppressor or oppressed. And I mean, I like the idea of resistance, but you were going to say something.
Yeah, and I mean, and part of the reason I say like this book connotes for me women of resistance is that then within that context, the first people who are named after the opening pages when we have this back, you know, connection back to the patriarchal lineage, the first people who are named are the midwives who are behaving in direct resistance to all the dehumanizing work of the empire.
It's quite a significant moment there for sure. And I think you're right. I mean, in answering the original question I had, what kind of a world is this world of Egypt in the beginning chapters? It's truly a world where the promises of God made in the Garden of Eden to be fruitful, to multiply, are actually taking material form in reality. In whatever was promised then has come into fruition here. So you're right. I think there's an energy. There's a movement that is seeking life and flourishing. And we find the figure of Pharaoh within this environment, within this world, sort of as a resistance to that kind of mode of being. So then the choice becomes, am I moving along the rhythm of this divine desire for flourishing in life that starts in Genesis and moves all the way up to the pages of Exodus? Or will we be part of that resistance toward these movements of life? And that's, I think, how we associate each character in the first chapters.
And
are they siding with the movement of God, or are they settling for the moods of empire? Right.
Yeah. And I think that distinction that you just make is very important, because I think the text itself doesn't fully allow us to oversimplify the categories. It's not just against Pharaoh.
Yeah.
There are Hebrew people who are dehumanizing each other.
Yeah.
So it's a call to attention to the fabric of empire, not to specific identities or titles.
I mean, the chapter, second chapter that is part of our lesson one ends with Hebrews hurting each other, meaning that it's yep. it's not easily something easy to just disassociate from one from the other.
Matilda. So I loved, because you pointed out, a dehumanizing force. Those who are in power have no names. The dehumanizers do not have names in the text, but those who are dehumanized are named in the text. And that is, to me, the first way of looking at this book as a subversion of the political power that exists, the oppressive power that exists, that God sees, hears, names the ones who feel it. Who feel that oppression. And the first ones are the people from the past, but then the women who are named here, the first two women, yep. midwives.
Yeah, once the narrative yes. starts in Exodus.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Can we get to the women?
Of course, please, right now. Matilda, lead us there. Seven. Not six, as I've mentioned before.
I have to give you those seven so that we don't lose them.
Okay, yes. Good.
So the first one is called Sifra. The English translation gives it as Shifra, but I want to insist it's Sifra. Mm-hmm. And the second one is Pua.
Pua.
And then we have
Hebrew midwives.
Yep.
The two right. Hebrew midwives wives who resist Pharaoh, who has no name, who is any kind of oppressive power every time in the entire world.
And by the way, just a quick parenthesis, no name because we see people filling that role throughout history. Right?
Yes.
It's almost like there's no identity there apart from this dehumanizing mood.
Mm-hmm.
Go on, Matilda.
The second pair of women are Moses' mother and his sister, Jochebed and Miriam.
We got four.
We have a third pair, and this is Pharaoh's daughter and her maidservant.
Ah, here you caught me, Matilda.
She plays a big role in the text.
Okay.
Because she is a servant, but she acts together with Pharaoh's daughter.
In resistance to empire.
Yes.
Not named, but an important character
Correct.
In partnership with, with Pharaoh's. That's very insightful. I'm going to have to change my list now. Go on, but there's one more.
And the seventh one is Zipporah.
Yeah.
And take note that this is Sifra and Zipporah, which is just one single letter difference in the Hebrew text.
Interesting.
The first and the seventh one connect those two. And then I said there is a second seven. When Moses goes into the desert, he meets seven daughters.
Mm.
Oh, interesting.
Of the Midianite.
Yeah.
And Zipporah is part of both of sevens.
Zipporah
is the daughter, and she is the wife of Moses.
And we're back to how we started. The significance of these women living within the rhythms of divine flourishing, desire, and power in this new world of Egypt that we're introduced to in the book of Exodus. There's so much to discuss here, my dear friends. So thank you to my conversation partners, Matilda and Jody, to our program engineer, Corin Bailey, and to all of you for listening. For The Good Word, I'm Thiago Ajais.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.